You know, there are so many fascinating birds and animals that call Wisconsin home, but few are as awe-inspiring as eagles. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Jeb Barzin joined the staff of the International Crane Foundation in 1987 and is the director of field ecology there. He's a volunteer for the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council and directs their research and monitoring efforts coordinated and conducted on a population of eagles that winter along the lower Wisconsin River. And Jeb, welcome back. Great to have you with us on the show.
Thank you, Larry. It's wonderful to be here.
And great to have John Keefe with us as well. John is president of the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council, chairs the 2015 Eagle Watching Days event, which is coming up this weekend. And John, thank you for joining us today as well. Appreciate it very much.
Always fun to be here.
You know, it's always fun to talk about eagles. They're such a majestic bird. I think, awe-inspiring. I said it earlier, and I think that's really true. Let's start with a sort of a general talk about eagles. Most of us have seen, every one of us here in Wisconsin, I'm sure, has seen at least a photo. Almost all of us now have probably seen one flying, and we know they're big birds, but talk about their size and their diet and a little bit about their habits, Jeb.
Well, eagles are, we typically think of them as a fish-eating large raptor. Raptor are birds that eat other animals, typically birds or fish. They have always bred in the northern environs. In our kind of mindset, they've always been in that lake where you fish your muskies, in northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, and so on. But they're a real wildlife success story because when they've recovered, they've actually expanded back to what is more typical of their normal range, which means in the southern parts of the U.S. oftentimes. And in southern Wisconsin, we have eagles nesting in almost all the counties in Wisconsin now. And as they do that, they're telling us all kinds of things about how adaptable they are. So our traditional image of a lone nest in a northern lake for prime eagle habitat is no longer true because they can nest in a rural area in southern Sauk County now, for example, in places we never thought that they would nest in.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, I'm old enough, plenty old enough, to remember when, holy cow, you saw an eagle. That was a big deal. And it's still a big deal, but it happens a whole lot more frequently these days. I see them all the time in the Madison area.
Well, in the first survey that the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources did for breeding eagles in Wisconsin was in either 1972 or 1973, and they estimated 108 nesting territories. And now they have, well over 1,000 nesting territories that are in the state. Just to give you an idea, your memory is quite right. They were much, much rarer in the early 70s for a whole host of reasons.
And do we know the history going way back and further back of eagles in the state? I mean, is it back to, we probably don't really know, do we?
We have records of where eagles were, and they're, when we look in our own area, since we're talking about eagles wintering in Sauk Prairie, we can look the late 1800s and know that there's an eagle inn. And so that we know that eagles were still using our area, for a long time. But we don't have real precision in what we know about that.
And John, where do the eagles that winter in the Sauk Prairie area, where do they come from? Are they all over the state or are they?
We have to make the assumption it's not only all over the state, but from the Upper Peninsula, maybe from over Minnesota too. The mobility of these birds is something that we are constantly learning about. We, Ferry Bluff, sponsored a radio tracking project 10 years ago or so, 4 seasons. And one of the things that we learned from that is not just in the local Sauk Prairie, Wisconsin River area, that they were moving so much from time to time, but one of the birds that we had, and this was a mild winter, was there for a week or two, and then the signal disappeared. The DNR was doing its winter survey and found the signal on that bird up in the Chippewa flowage.
Oh.
And then 3 weeks later, the bird was back in Sauk Prairie. So that's a huge
Chippewa, Florida, just a long way.
That's a huge distance that they have. Now, that was a mild winter. If you've got cold temperatures and, you know, snow on the ground, you're not going to see that as likely. But it does serve to remind us that they move a lot, mm-hmm. and they have a lot of different needs, and it varies considerably with the environmental conditions that exist.
Yeah. I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. Maybe you have a question about eagles. Are you an eagle watcher? What fascinates you? Maybe you have a question about the upcoming Eagle Days. We're certainly going to talk about them as well with our guests. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@WPR.org, or you can post on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show for that. And Eric in Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, thanks for your call, or thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to relate a really interesting story that my wife's uncle had related about years back when he was out probably muskie fishing, actually, on the lake. And he had, well, maybe, yeah, I'm not sure exactly what time of year it was, but he was relating a story where he saw an eagle on the surface of the lake, and it looked like it was struggling a bit, and so he came up with this, you know, came up to it and couldn't figure out what was going on, it turned out that there was actually another eagle that was locked in its talons underneath the water that had drowned. And so, I mean, I know that a lot of raptors, you know, do their mating ritual or behavior where they'll lock talons and then they'll kind of plummet out of the sky a little bit and then break away, and it seemed like they didn't break away in enough time in order to get down to into the water. And so he was he tells that story every Christmas time, and just really, it's really interesting. I'm just wondering how often, if there's been if the guests can comment on if, you know, this is something that happens now and again or often, or it was just really interesting.
As an aside, was he able to free them?
He was. He was actually able to free the second eagle that was still on the surface of the water. He was able to help release it.
Okay. All right. Well, comments. Let's. John, you want to take a crack first?
That is a new story, as far as I'm concerned. No, the aerial display of the cartwheeling down. Yes. No. That's common enough, especially in warmer temperatures. Not in the dead of winter, perhaps, but maybe Jeb has more experience or more recollections than I have.
Well, one of the things that I thoroughly enjoy about these opportunities to talk with a broader range of people is I always learn. I've never heard of that, but when you think about it, it's certainly a plausible sort of scenario, because they do these spectacular courtship free falls, and then if they get tangled up, they can fall all the way to the water. And birds in general, and eagles in particular, have interesting mechanisms to allow them to perch without using energy. Their tendons are oriented in such a way that if their legs are deflected, the talons close. And if somehow when the bird under the water had its legs in a position such that they would be mechanically closed, it wouldn't open up. Mm. And so it's a very possible thing to have happen. Freakish, yes, but still, you know, very possible to have happen. And so these stories that people have are always things that give you insight into these animals.
Oh, absolutely. Eric, thanks a lot for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Just to add to that, my own, on two occasions, musky fishing, I've observed eagles swimming in the water and, you know, swimming to shore. And I expect they probably were trying to nail a fish or something and sort of couldn't get back up, and so they just swam to shore. And, yeah, they were perfectly fine in both cases. I watched them get to the shore.
But they don't look terribly graceful in water.
No, they don't. and unfortunately, in both cases, it was before smartphones, so I wasn't able to get a video of it. I wish I didn't have a video recorder with me. It would have been fun to have had.
When you think about it, eagles have incredible eyesight, and coordination, but they're still an airplane, essentially. They're an air platform, and they're diving down, and they don't necessarily know exactly what the size of the thing that they're picking up, and there's limits to what they can carry. And so if you pick up that Lunker, it's going to drag you into the water. And so they are actually much more adept at water than what we give them credit for, but they don't look terribly graceful when they're in it. But eagles will pick up as food in the water anything from that Lunker that they can't carry away, and sometimes they'll even try and swim to shore with it in their talons because they're very reluctant to let it go once they've got it. Or, and the other end of the extreme, in the winter area, they're swooping down and catching parts of fish that have come through the dam that are so small you really can't see them, but you can see their behavior as they lift their feet to their bill before they even get back to the perch. They've eaten this very, very small morsel of food.
Oh, really interesting. Eric, thanks again. Dennis in Alton, Minnesota, thank you for calling. Afton, Minnesota, sorry. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for this. As I was thinking, sitting there waiting a little bit, I thought maybe I'll open with my haiku. Eagle in tree, fish in pond, fish in tree.
There you go.
But one of the main things I'm calling about this morning, driving up, I was able to admire an eagle working on the remains of a deer, so that was fresh in my mind. But it reminded me of at the end of my driveway last summer how two adult eagles teamed up with the young eagle to show how to distract the crows and get their eggs. It was quite phenomenal. I watched them for about a half hour as one eagle distracted the others and got them angry and took them off, and then the one adult accompanied the young eagle to the crow's nest and got the eggs. So, I mean, that was quite an adventure. But the main reason I'm probably calling is I've been told to try to avoid a problem here. But up in Alaska, they become a nuisance. They'll sit above your door on your cabin and do nasty things to your sidewalk. And, you know, with people always wanting to attract beauty to them, I've seen that, people putting out feed and attracting them to a restaurant. I mean, is there a way to get on the handle and not have them become a nuisance so then we'll try to do them in?
Yeah. That's kind of sad. John, a comment?
I guess, you know, it all kind of depends upon individuals and what might be a nuisance to one set of one person may not be a nuisance. It may be an awe-inspiring situation to somebody else. And so it really, I would think, is a very individualized kind of situation. I have not been aware of the eagles becoming a nuisance, as you say. I have seen eagles up in Alaska, and there's so much space there. If they're really at your house, that's one thing. But, you know, ordinarily I'd say it's, usually there's enough space to let them have theirs, and then we can enjoy them in their own environment.
And Dennis, thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. One of the things he mentioned was that he observed eagles eating on a deer carcass, and we were talking a little bit before the show about lead poisoning, and Jeb, you were explaining, you know, someone said, well, gee, I shot a deer and the bullet was and seemed to be perfectly intact. How would they get lead poisoning? But you had were telling me about something, some research on that.
Well, there's been research that shows that when a lead bullet impacts in a deer, even if a majority of the bullet remains as a hole, there's a whole cloud of lead fragments that separate from the main part of the bullet and can be found in both the meat and in the organs. And many of these parts are small enough that you can't see them with your naked eye, you can't pick them out, but you still have access to them. And that is still a very important source of lead toxicity for eagles, and it might actually even still be a human health problem. It's hard to prove a negative, but people have access. If they eat that meat with those small fragments of lead, they're much more likely to at least get some lead into their system, and if they eat a lot of venison, it can be a problem. And with eagles, it's not limiting the population. Eagle numbers are still growing, but a very, very large number of eagles can be found with lead poisoning, specifically right after the gun deer season that occurs in the upper Midwest. And so it's a very, very important issue for eagles, even if it's not limiting the population.
Mm-hmm. And our caller was also talking about observing eagles. And I think coming up here, we're going to talk about eagle. If you really want to see the eagles and have a great time doing it, you should be attending Eagle Watching Days coming up this weekend. We'll talk about that next with our two guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Wisconsin's Bald Eagles and Eagle Watching Days. That's with our two guests. John Keefe, president of the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council, chairs the 2015 Eagle Watching Days event. And Jeb Barzin. Jeb, been with us many times. He's been with the International Crane Foundation since 1987, directs field ecology there, volunteers with the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council. So great to have both of them with us. Again, you can join in with your questions about Eagle Watching Days or about eagles themselves at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can go to our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. You can post, hey, if you got an eagle photo, we'd love to see that. And you can post your questions as well. And Jeb, I know you wanted to comment on, we were talking about Alaska and eagles earlier, and you had something you wanted to add in that area.
Yeah, Dennis brought up the issue of when abundance of eagles can go awry, essentially. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're talking about Eagle Watching Days, which is people celebrating the congregation of eagles in the Sauk Prairie area. And so they're really not too dissimilar. But how we deal with that is a really important issue between where it can create problems versus where it can be a really productive sort of scenario. So in at least one area of Alaska, on the tip of the Kenai Peninsula near Homer, they had fed offal from the fish catch to eagles, and they would congregate in very, very large numbers and be very, very conditioned to being very close to people, and it would create a huge problem in that. And there's a lot of controversy over that. There's a controversy about, is there too many eagles in that area? Are they creating too much of a predator influence on cranes that are breeding in the area, just because I have to link my own job with what I do for a volunteer basis. But so there's lots of different issues. And so how and when you congregate birds in a particular area matters. And in our day and age, as we have wildlife success stories, managing populations that recover, that become abundant once again, is an important part of our overall ability to do conservation in these areas. Because as birds, in this case, species of birds or mammals, increase, we have to take care of the conservation issues that arise when they grow in numbers, just as much as we have to deal with conservation issues when they're very low in numbers and we want to recover them. And so Eagle Watching Days is a vehicle through which we have birds that are naturally occurring in our area, and we can talk about why. But by bringing people in and linking them to this eagle resource, we're creating a way that people gain from that as well as the birds. And by groups like Ferry Bluff Eagle Council in conjunction with the DNR for Wisconsin or for the federal government and so on, what we're really trying to do is make to guide that recovery and how people relate to that in a really productive way so that it is much more sustainable. Because if it's not done in a sustainable way, you get all sorts of problems that arise.
All kinds of problems. So that's a great explanation. And I want to go to John a bit here, John, because this weekend, give us the parameters of this. The Eagle Watching Day has been going on for a while now.
This is the 28th annual Eagle Watching Days. So, yes, indeed, almost three decades.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And why are the eagles there? Why do we have such a confluence of eagles?
Well, there's just a confluence of very favorable habitat kinds of issues there. The main one, of course, is the hydroelectric dam right north of Prairie du Sac, which maintains open water below the dam regardless of how cold it is. I don't know whether it's ever frozen right below the dam. Open water means a food supply, and food is the name of the game, especially for a wintering eagle when other sources of food,
animals, lakes have all frozen over.
And snow maybe on the farmlands and so forth. So the river becomes a primary source. But in addition to that, there are a couple other factors which make that particular area really very, very conducive to congregation of large numbers of eagles. One are the perching trees, the large cottonwoods or oaks or whatever along the river or on the islands in the river. We sometimes refer to that as loafing, but I think that's kind of a term that is demeaning to the birds, because really it's a survival technique where they're sitting there on the perching branches next to the river, waiting for the food to come to them, rather than them flying out and burning up their energy looking for the food. So that really helps them survive in cold weather. The third factor that's very important are the roosts that are available, rounded bowls in the bluffs along the river. Unlike the nesting season, when the eagles are extraordinarily territorial, in the wintertime, they're very communal. In some of these roosts, and Ferry Bluff has done roost counts for about 30 years, and we have a lot of data, and we have maybe one or two birds in a roost, but we a lot of times have 40, 50, even over 100 birds in a single roost right adjacent to the river nearby.
Wow.
Is easy for them to get to that roost from the river and their food supply, as well as the next day to come back to the river and start hunting again.
It's absolutely fascinating, and I've been many times to eagle watching days, and every time I enjoy it. It doesn't, I mean, if you go one year, you can come, be sure to go back the next year too, because you're going to see something new and different and have a lot of fun doing it. Talk about what goes on at the event.
Basically, I think Eagle Days is designed to do two things. One, to provide a platform whereby people can see eagles in the wild up close, as well as learn about them. It's not just seeing them, but learning about them, why they're there, and what we need to do to continue to make sure that they're going to be coming back year after year. To do this, Eagle Days has been designed with programs at the River Arts Center, which is adjacent to the high school there in Sauk Prairie. We have a number of programs, two live bird of prey shows on Saturday, 9 in the morning, 3 in the afternoon. We have some other small venue opportunities at the Tripp Memorial Museum in downtown Prairie du Sac, talking about different kinds of things, including eagle cams in Wisconsin. And we have an interesting local fellow, Frank LaCour, who is going to be talking about Old Abe, our iconic Civil War eagle. His family found that eagle and gave it to the military, and he's telling the story about Old Abe. So, plus, the other big draw I think that we have as far as presentations are the eagle release that we have down to VFW Park by Marge Gibson, an extraordinary eagle rehabilitator, raptor rehabilitator, actually. And she is planning to be there to release at least a couple of eagles at 1 o'clock at the VFW Park in Prairie du Sac as well. In addition, there's the opportunities for people to explore on their own. Mm-hmm. We've got the overlook there at Prairie du Sac next to the municipal parking lot. You can go down to the dam north of the village there and sit in the parking lot, which is very conveniently located right below the dam, and watch the birds perching the trees off to your right, swooping down across the waters, picking something up out and carrying it back to the trees to munch on. Sometimes they attract a few friends too, and all of a sudden you have a food fight like you don't see very often. So there's opportunities, yes, to see the birds and see them up close, but you know, also to learn more about why they're there and what we can do to help keep them there.
And we have, I think we have a link on our Facebook page to the Eagle Watching Days, which gives the exact times. But why don't you just give us the Saturday?
Basically, we are open for business there at the River Arts Center at 8 o'clock. In the lobby there, the first program starts at 9 o'clock. And that's the Live Bird of Prey show from the University of Minnesota Raptor Center. And they bring not just eagles, but other raptors, owls, falcons, hawks, varies from year to year. That goes throughout the day and the afternoon. The Raptor Center closes up at 3 in the afternoon with another hour-long program, which would probably be over about 4 o'clock or so. But keep in mind, the birds are there every day and throughout, January and February. So if people can't make it this weekend, there's always other opportunities next week and the week after through the end of February.
Yeah, and there you go. Mary in Menominee has something. Mary, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hello.
Hi, Mary. Are you there?
Yes. I was just wondering, I live in a confluence area where the Red Cedar and the Chippewa meet, and I was driving into town, and my car was attacked by an eagle. He swooped down about 5 times, and I don't know if I had something in, I have a ski rack on the top of my car, and he dive-bombed it like 5 times.
Oh.
So it's
wow.
Like, we've had a lot of different encounters, you know, where they swoop down or they sit on the house, but I've never had it attack the car before.
Wow.
I wonder if that's a very often occurrence.
So you've got a carrier on top?
Yes.
Yeah. I've got one on top of my car, too, and it actually, if I am thinking about it now, the way it's positioned, it almost looks like wings.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think, Jeb?
Well, that's as good of a guess, Larry, as I could probably make. The only other tack that I was going to take is that it's possible that you had collided with another bird or something like that, and there was that bird was caught up in the aperture of the rack on your vehicle, and the eagle was looking at that as a source of food. But it's just really hard to understand how an eagle would be that acclimatized to your vehicle to attack it in that way, because they're typically very careful about what they'll swoop down on. But it's always possible, and as I said earlier, it's I always learn in terms of these shows, because people constantly have observations that are remarkable, and they usually shed light on it.
Those are the most scariest things I've ever been through.
Yeah.
I come right through, the talons just swooped right past the windshield. It was like, close enough.
Oh, man. Well, a good experience, Mary. Thanks for sharing it. Appreciate your call. Oh, man. Scott in Eau Claire, your turn. Hi, Scott.
Good morning. How are you gentlemen this morning?
Great. Appreciate your call. What's on your mind?
I've traveled around Wisconsin for a number of years, and every year as the Mississippi River opens up, I see eagles setting down along the river, and they'll be spaced, maybe 300 or 400 yards apart, feeding. A lot bigger eagles than what I see around home during the summer or even up north in the summer. Have these eagles migrated in from somewhere else, like the Rocky Mountains or something?
Oh, okay, Jeb.
Well, the eagles that are in on the Mississippi River, especially in the spring, are typically eagles that have wintered further south on the Mississippi River system, and they're often going up to northern Manitoba the Northwest Territory, or not the North, I'm sorry, I can't remember the Canadian province now that is north of Manitoba, but it's, I can't remember the name of it. But anyways, they're going up into the areas of northern Canada. As to whether or not they're larger in size, it's less likely that they're larger in size. But there's a couple of other things that you might be seeing that's quite real, which is a lot of times in that migration, especially later in migration, you have more immatures than you have adults. And immatures, especially those that hatched the previous summer, look a lot bigger because their tail feathers are longer. And so that they have a larger appearance in the first year after they've fledged, and that kind of gives you can give you an idea that, you know, these birds are a bit bigger. But I'm not aware of a huge size difference between the birds that are breeding in northern Manitoba, for example, and, say, northern Wisconsin.
Interesting. And would goldens, would there be any goldens, or is there a size difference between bald eagles and goldens? We do see some along the...
Yes, you absolutely can see golden eagles in the Mississippi River Valley throughout the winter, as well as possibly even some that are breeding in that area, but we don't have many records. But in terms of size, they're approximately close to each other in size. If anything, a golden is a little bit smaller, but I'm not positive.
Okay, there we go. Thanks, Scott, for calling. Appreciate your call. Amy in Port Wing, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hello. So I heard that the wolf hunting is going to stop in our state, and that by reenlisting wolves and letting their population be more vibrant, we can help other populations. Could you talk about, like, I have heard that there's a relationship between wolves and scavengers, such as the eagles and ravens. Mm-hmm. Is that true? Can you talk about that?
All right, Jeb, comment?
the relationship between wolves and other predators is a fascinating one, and the best example of that is where wolves were reintroduced into Yellowstone. And the end story is that as wolves were introduced into Yellowstone, grizzly bears increased. Yeah. And the reason for that is that, as best we understand, is that wolves could make their kills, and then a grizzly bear would just scare the wolves off of these fresh kills, which gave much better nutrition to especially female grizzly bears, who then gave birth to more young. So triplets became much more commonly seen as opposed to single cubs and that sort of
Interesting.
Thing.
Interesting.
And so wolves had a positive influence on grizzly bears, but they also had a big influence on ungulates that were feeding in those areas, and so grazing patterns also shifted. And so there's a whole cascading effect of the presence of wolves in the Yellowstone system. Here, in terms of wolf kills, they certainly are important for scavengers like eagles, but nobody's really drawn a distinct relationship between wolves that are in the state and eagles. For example, eagles have been increasing very strongly well before actually wolves began increasing in Wisconsin. So it's a little bit tenuous to draw a very direct link between right. eagles and wolves in Wisconsin.
There we go. Thank you, Amy, for calling. I want to give Vicki in the Menominee, Michigan area a chance to join us. Vicki, hello.
Hi. How are you today?
Great. Appreciate your call.
Yeah, I just turned the program on. I'm driving into work, and I heard about you talking about eagles and how they go into the water and things like that, and it reminded me of a couple of stories because we live on the Bay of Green Bay, and we see eagles all the time. And there was one time that there was this huge eagle out in the water, and it was swimming. And I called my neighbor, and I said, oh, my God, I think there's something wrong with that eagle. I said, should we call the DNR? And it wasn't really that far from shore. And he's like, no, just let it be for a little while. We'll keep an eye on it, and we'll wait and see what happens. Well, that eagle kept, and its wings were, like, crooked, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is terrible. Well, wouldn't you know, in a couple of minutes, that eagle landed on the shore with a huge, huge fish in its claws, and it was just incredible. And that's all he was doing was landing that fish, and he looked like he was dying. The way that happened. But there was a couple other things. We were walking down our driveway, and my children said to me, what is that? And it was a great big fish right in the middle of our driveway. And the closest thing we could figure was that it was too heavy for an eagle, and he dropped it. And that's like the second or third time that we've seen that happen, where an eagle will swoop down and get a fish and then, you know, take off with it. And then a little while later, there's a fish in our driveway. So it's kind of funny. You see all sorts of silly things with that, you know.
Well, it sounds like some great stories there, Jeb. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that might be happening is that eagles are famous for stealing. So taking fish from other eagles or from osprey, for example, who are also fish catchers. And so you might be having an area where there could be, say, if your fish rain is occurring in the summertime, you might be having an osprey nest and an eagle nest that's close to each other. And the eagle will be paying attention to when the osprey catches fish and then go and attack it, and it will drop the fish. And in the hubbub that occurs is that those activities are occurring, the fish will fall on your driveway. So, you know, it'd be kind of curious to see if you have a eagle nest and osprey nest that are somewhat near your area where they might be frequenting that and making your driveway more likely to have fish rain.
Well, I know that we do have an eagle's nest because we see the young. Every year there's young. So,
but not so sure yet about the osprey, but there could, you know, Jeb's right. There could well be one nearby. Keep your eyes peeled, Vicki. What does an osprey nest look like? Is it a...
Much like an eagle nest, they tend to be oriented closer to water than often eagle nests are, and they also tend to use platforms more than do eagles. But other than that, it's hard to
Hard to tell the difference. All right.
Except if there's an osprey in it, then it tends to be an osprey nest.
Thanks, Vicki. Kim in East Troy, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. We live on Lake Beulah and in southeastern Wisconsin, and there has been some osprey activity. And so an organization has erected a platform for nesting, and the osprey have not taken over that platform. However, we have seen eagle in the area recently. So my question is, would the eagle ever take over that platform of the osprey?
What do you think, Jeb?
Sure. They can. Eagles tend to be a little bit more flexible in the nest locations that they'll use, so they may use the platform or they may use trees that you wouldn't normally expect to find an eagle nest in nearby. But it's entirely possible.
Well, in the wintertime, many times Lake Beulah is open in certain areas. So that makes me think, too, that they may be more apt to, you know, be in the area in the winter versus just a summer or earlier in the season type situation.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, you know, one of the things, there's a lot that we don't know about eagles, and one of the things that we really haven't been able to prove is whether eagles that are nesting, say, in the Sauk Prairie area actually stay here all winter long. We see eagles adding sticks to nests and using their nests very frequently throughout the winter, but we don't really know that if they're the same birds that are actually nesting there. So,
would the platform be the same size for an osprey? If someone would put one up or erect one, would the same size platform be for both of those birds, or would they be totally different?
No, they would be the same size, because most of the platforms put up are for ospreys, but eagles will occasionally use them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There we go. Thank you, Kim.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate your call very much. And here we go. This weekend, this Saturday is the day, although as John was saying earlier, if you want to see eagles, the Sauk Prairie area, you can any time in the next month for sure. But the special deal is this Saturday and open at 8, but the first educational event at Sauk Prairie is at 9 o'clock, John, right?
That is correct. That is, and that would be at the River Arts Center there adjacent to the high school. Keep in mind, too, though, that we also have bus tours that leave from the Cedarberry Inn in Sauk City every Saturday throughout eagle season. It's a guided tour where people can come in and take a look at some of the best sites for seeing birds.
Oh, that's absolutely wonderful. And there are some other events, too. There's a day with eagles along the Fox River, January 17th in the Fox Cities area. There's Bald Eagle Days, January 24th and 25th in Cassville. Bald Eagle Appreciation Days, February 27th and 8th in Prairie du Chien. And Bald Eagle Day, March 7th in Ferryville. So we have all those posted up on our Facebook page. So, and certainly this weekend's a lot more information for you on what's going on with our Eagle Watching Day in Sauk Prairie area. And John and Jeb, as always, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Our pleasure.
Thank you for having us.
We have been speaking with Jeb Barzin, who is with the International Crane Foundation, but also volunteer for the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council's work, and great to have him with us. He comes by. He's been with us many, many times. John Keefe, president of the Ferry Bluff Eagle Council, chair of the 2015 Eagle Watching Days event. Always interesting to learn more about people and animals who live right here in Wisconsin. And coming up next, we're going to learn about life in a part of the world that's about as far away as you can imagine. We'll find out about the researchers who work at the Ice Cube Project in Antarctica. So I hope you'll stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.